One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
You're listening to the Irish Farmers Journal podcast.
Hi, folks. I'm Jack Kennedy, and welcome to this week's podcast, Down to Agribusiness. Once again, I'm joined by Anne Finnegan and Phelim O'Neill for our weekly chat on all things agribusiness. Folks, I was spending a lot of time this week looking at the Arrivo business. They've just announced their financial results, the first of the major dairy processors to announce their financial results for 2021. In summary, a hugely positive year for Arrivo in terms of the numbers, whether it's operating profit, turnover, all up and across all business segments, whether it's the consumer foods piece, they have a play there in terms of liquid milk, dairy ingredients, which is their main business. So it's powder and butter for Arrivo. They've no cheese play. So again, that was hugely significant. The agribiz side of things again was up, a kind of a COVID, post-COVID kind of a piece in terms of trading in all their agribusiness stores. They have 34 stores across the Western Seafront. They were all again up in terms of turnover and profit. And the Mart's business was returning. Phelim, you'll be delighted to hear the Mart's business was returning to a more profitable business again because the turnover was up, and obviously there was no weeks lost in terms of COVID, etc., and that kind of thing. So it was obviously it's working on the dual system now of online and in person, and turnover in the Mart's was up to 87 million. They have four Mart's, BAL being the headquarters, I'll say, of the Mart business in Arrivo. So, in terms of the headwind for 2022, the big challenge that the CEO Donald Tierney was kind of calling out, of course, was two challenges. One was this retail inflation piece, and the second was energy. And he's saying that the Arrivo business will, the drying milk component of the Arrivo business, the cost of that, the energy cost associated with that will increase 40 to 50% for 2022. A huge increase. So they're working a mix of biomass, liquid nitrogen, and heavy oil or diesel in terms of their energy sources. And Arrivo are, they're not connected to the piped gas piece because the line just doesn't go there, and it was seemingly going to cost millions and millions to get the line up to Ballyhedrin. So they're on the liquid gas piece and the biomass. In effect, they're both unusual for milk processors. Both those sources, biomass and liquid gas, are unusual for milk processors, but they're probably still not. They're probably, obviously, from Donald Tierney's assumptions that it's going to increase 40 to 50%, they're not insulated from the market in terms of energy costs and what's happening out there, albeit that they have three different sources: biogas, liquid gas, and the heavy oil.
Yeah, for any industrial user of energy at the moment, it's very hard to insulate yourself. I would say Arrivo are probably in a really good position. The investment in their biomass burner you know, really and truly, they have to be commended for it. And it does show real foresight. I'm pretty sure at the time it was motivated from a sustainability perspective and reducing their emissions. But in terms of future-proofing the business, it will bear fruit for them this year. I mean, just even in terms of the gas price, for the business to go out and procure gas this year, they're looking at an increase of 5 to 6 times what they paid last year for natural gas, and probably higher, you know, probably a premium for Arrivo, given that it's LNG and it's and it's tanked into them. So there's probably even some premium on that. So in terms of what they've done with the biomass, I mean, I think that really was future proofing, and it will serve them well. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, how they benchmark against other processors when you're talking to them about energy costs, because, you know, when you talk about 50%, it seems strange to say it, but it almost seemed modest say that that's the extent of the increase when we look at where oil and gas is trading.
I put it to Donal in terms of Donal Tierney, the CEO. I put it to him in terms of hedging now, you know. So he said, look, we were hedged up until March of this year, 2022. But he says to go back into the hedging piece now would cost them big time, like in terms of trying to hedge it. Like, I mean, that's real, isn't it?
Yeah, I think given where the prices are, I mean, you're talking about going in at high prices and with significant market volatility, you know, and the market is reacting to sentiment every day. So you're going to pay an absolute premium to go in and try and hedge at this stage. And they're the challenges that businesses, you know, in agri-food and right across the board are grappling with now.
But energy is there a chance, Anne? Like, and look at it, we've been through a pandemic, we're in the middle of a war. Is there a chance that we could be proved wrong in terms of the high cost? We're saying it would cost high now to hedge. Like, is there a chance that it could get worse? Like,
there is. I mean, there's. I suppose that's the challenge in the market. There's a chance that it'll stay, that the market just trades as it is, you know, within a region of where it is at the moment, that it can get worse and it can get better. I mean, obviously the big concern is now energy sanctions on Russia. We did see the EU's latest round of sanctions yesterday, tackling coal very much. Like the EU is very careful to stay away from oil and gas, and there have been renewed calls from centrist politicians in Germany. So this isn't anti-business voices, but very much centrist pro-business voices, calling to cut German oil imports and gas imports. And look, I do think politically, you know, it's a tight wire. Yes, by continuing to trade, you're funding a regime that's committing atrocities in the Ukraine. I suppose the big concern is that pulling out of that, that you drive the pain onto European citizens, and suddenly that support within the EU for the Ukraine could become quite fragmented. So it's a real tightrope. And I think so the big question is, what happens in relation to sanctions? And the expectation is that the EU isn't going to go there. And how does Russia retaliate? And does it start to slow or pull exports? And they're the challenges. So it's going to be a hard one either way to call, Jack, for any business.
Yeah, you're right. And I suppose this example, this case study that we're talking about, Arrivo, I mean, it just shows how the global energy markets impact on Irish dairy farmers, for example. Because, I mean, if the cost of production, of processing goes sky high, even higher than where it is, I mean, it will mean less payout to dairy farmers in terms of milk price. At the moment, the dairy business is good and the dairy ingredients business is good. So it can carry that extra cost, I'll say, you know. So, I mean, Anne, I was even just listening to some of the wider news, like I think Ursula von der Leyen was suggesting that maybe oil might be next on the sanction list, and like, I mean, yeah, it could, as you say, it could come back to bite. I mean, the other piece, Anne, in terms of he talked about the inflation piece. Like they have, Orivo have a liquid milk business. And Phelim, I'll bring you in because I know you have something on food price inflation as well this week in the journal. But Donal Tierney was talking about the liquid milk piece, and obviously the liquid milk prices at the shop shelf hasn't gone up according to the cost increase in terms of processing and the raw ingredient milk price, which has gone up at farm level or is going up at the moment. So, I mean, he's kind of, I won't say he's worried, but I mean, he's saying that the market needs to deliver more on that piece. And the whole piece he said around packaging, like, I mean, okay, it's not as big as the raw material cost, but the packaging piece, again, it's all oil related, that inflation piece, like that's real again this year.
Yeah, look, and I think, I mean, look, it's very difficult to pick up a newspaper or turn on the radio and listen to it for any length of time without being conditioned, I'd say, at this stage for consumer price increases. I think, you know, for the processing sector and for the farming sector, this has to move, and it's right across the board. But I mean, obviously, the most immediate impact will be in something like liquid milk. I mean, we have a fairly small consumer food business in Ireland where we're delivering fresh, let's say, dairy products onto the shelf. We should be pushing for price increases there, and I suppose. Look, it's going to be a challenge for consumers when it comes at any stage, but you know, in terms of how the energy piece unfolds, this could jump much higher, much quicker. So, you know, do you step consumer prices up or do they have to go? Because I think there's going to be great pressure across the board. I mean, right now we're in spring, energy costs, domestic energy costs are going to get lower. People are going to see their heating bills, possibly their electricity bills, you know, tapering off a little as we go into the summer months. It's all really going to bite for the average consumer when we start heading back into the winter. We're facing higher heating, higher cost of living, greater use of transport cars as we get into the winter and the weather turns poorer. So, I mean, it's reasonable that we should be looking at staging some of these prices up now when the additional cost is in there, because come the back end, it's going to be very hard, and it's going to be very hard to get those price increases.
Phelim, you have a piece on food price inflation again this week.
Yeah, we've just looked at it briefly, Jack, in terms of the consumer price inflation in their ag biz section. We've looked at the G7 countries, actually the top 70 performing economies in the world. And there was a major jump between January and February this year. Prices went up by 1.14%. And that built on a trend. And actually, just looking at the graph that we have on the page in the journal this week, we can see there just that it's a steady increase from last May, when actually food price inflation was around 2%. It passed 8.65% in February this year. So that you know, consumers are starting to see it at retail level. And I take your point there about Orivo saying that it hasn't been fully passed on yet. No, there's always a considerable lag. And even if things were to stop today or even to turn downwards, we would see consumer price inflation continue to creep up for the coming months. So that's going to be a fact of life in the coming months and weeks of 2022. It's just a case of when it stops rising now at this point.
Phelim, you've an in-depth piece in terms of the Canadian trade deal, or the potential Canadian trade deal with the UK, in terms of I suppose it's the next phase of trade deals that the UK is looking at. I mean, we have remind me now, we have Australia, New Zealand both have done deals with the UK, and Canada is the next on the line, you reckon?
Yeah, this is one that's maybe hard to get farmers engaged with, because as you have just mentioned there in the context of Orivo and the dairy business, and I was looking at the dairy commodity prices again this week, they've shot up for I don't know how many weeks in a row now. That is, all the main dairy commodities are rising on international markets. So we have had a rising beef market as well as a rising dairy market. And in that context, it's very hard to get people switched on to actually the things that are in gestation at the moment that will have a serious impact potentially on price in the months and indeed years ahead. One of these is the Canadian trade deal. Now, you correctly noted there, UK has done separate trade deals with EU, with Australia and New Zealand. And what's significant about them is that they essentially open the UK market completely to beef, sheep meat and dairy products from those countries to give them free access. Now, it will take a period of years for that to all to come in. It comes in on a progressive basis, a certain percentage increase each year. The latest one into this mix will be Canada. The UK and Canada completed their first round of negotiations last week. Now, as things stand today, the UK and Canada have rolled over an agreement that the EU had made with Canada a few years back in 2016, CETA. It was quite controversial at the time. And but the big thing here to watch out for is Canada appear to be getting access to the UK market for hormone-treated beef as a red line, that is a priority. Now, it was always talked about in the United States and the UK in a trade negotiation that this would be the big issue. UK-US negotiation seems to be some way off, but it'd be interesting to see if it comes to a head with Canada, and it'll be very interesting to see if the UK roll back from the position that they have stated that there will be no diminution of EU standards in EU and UK trade deals. This is one to really keep a close eye on. And I expect that this deal negotiation will move at considerable pace, as was the case with Australia and New Zealand. So one to watch out for, Jack.
And Phelan, are Canada big exporters over this part of the world? Like, I mean, I know from the dairy scene that the US, like, traditionally weren't huge exporters of dairy product, but they have a huge market. They've over 100 billion. They process or produce 100 billion litres of milk. Like, we produce, you know, an island of Ireland, basically, we produce 10 billion litres. We're big exporters because most of that 10 billion litres goes off the island. But in the case of the US, most of the 100 billion litres kind of is used within the country, and they don't export as much. Are Canada big traders?
They're very significant beef exporters, Jack. They will export anywhere around 500 to 600,000 tons of beef a year. So, and it's interesting as well to see the contrast and approach here. The Canadian cattle industry and beef processing industry, they are very embracing of free trade because they are a very substantial exporter. But, and you will know this better than me, there is no more protected market in the world than the Canadian dairy sector. You know, and that's something UK have ambitions of getting dairy products in there. I would be saying at this stage, not a hope. The EU negotiated a 30,000 ton dairy quota, and I think at this stage, and I don't know what the processors say, but I get the sense that processors have almost given up on that market. There are so many terms and conditions in terms of trying to get access to it. So they are very, very trade orientated when it comes to beef.
Okay, I'll leave you on this, Phil. And the last one is Japan as a market for beef. I mean, is there, like, there's been a lot of talk about it. Is it getting any closer?
Well, look, it's still a small market, but it's a growing market, Jack. That's what I would say about it. You know, if you look at Irish beef exports, the reality is UK still take 40% of them, and basically 40 to 45% goes to the rest of the European Union. Our opportunities outside of that are limited. The US hasn't really taken off, send maybe a couple of thousand tons a year now at this stage. It's actually fallen over the last couple of years. A little bit to Canada, that has been a growing small market, but growing. We're closed out of China effectively, and we still haven't got access to South Korea. Those are the two big volume, high value markets in Asia. But we are in the third one, Japan. We got back in there in 2013. Now, it's been a very slow burn. And part of the problem there was a very high tariff barrier, a 38.5% tariff that was imposed on EU imports and Irish imports. Now, since the trade deal that was negotiated when Phil Hogan was the Agriculture Commissioner in 2017, it came into effect in 2019, there's a progressive reduction on that tariff. In time, it'll come down to 9%. Currently, it's sitting at just over 24%. The effect of that for Irish exporters is that in January of this year, we sent 384 tons of beef and offal to that market. Now, that's broadly in line with what the later months of 2021 were as well. But if we look at going back to a year ago, January 2021, it was just 140 tons of beef. So it's a doubling, but it's doubling from a tiny base. But it does strike me as a market, it's a high value market. You know, the United States, Australia, New Zealand are the big suppliers there at the moment. And I think it's a market that we will see further growth for Irish exports in the years ahead. So maybe something positive in the Asian market there.
Remind me if Japan as a consumer of beef, is it high up there, Phelan? Like, or is it more the pork chicken piece? Like, you know, what's the meat of choice?
Well, look, it is. It's the second biggest importer in the world after the United States. In January alone, the United States exported almost 23,000 tons of beef there. It's a 300,000 ton a year market for them every year. So, but it's been a growing market. Yep, you're correct. They're more a pig meat market, perhaps even a poultry meat market. But beef has been a growing segment there. And that's something when we think about beef consumption. We look at 2030 figures, you know, at a global level. You know, the European, North American markets are all static or in slight decline, but the Asian market is growing and will continue to grow for the remainder of this decade and beyond.
Okay. And just one other piece that we've talked about previously on this podcast is this whole piece around the fixed milk price piece and maybe trying to align a basket of goods that we could track the input costs at farm level to align to the fixed milk price pieces. And Glanbia this week have brought out this, it's just breaking as we record this podcast, but effectively they've brought out this feed adjuster piece so that they're going to link a feed price whenever it's set, we call it in maybe 2 or 3 weeks' time, they're going to set a feed price. They're going to link it then to Matif and to the Chicago Board of Trade prices for soybean and wheat. And the suggestion is that for every 50 euros increase per ton on either the Matif for the Chicago, that the milk price will increase by a half a cent a litre. So in effect, the margin, well, just from feed in this case, is protected for the dairy farmer. I mean, Glanbia had in their initial couple of schemes, and they had a basket of goods piece that they tracked so that the margin was protected more for the dairy farmer. That all passed, you know. It evolved into a simpler scheme where the inputs weren't tracked at all, and obviously farmers are feeling the brunt of that now at the moment. And something like that needs to develop, I think, in terms of protecting the margin more so than just the output price or the input price.
Yeah, I mean, I think in terms of the fixed milk price schemes that we've seen, I think they have benefited farmers very well, and farmers have benefited from those. And, you know, it has enabled them to plan. It's even given certainty when they've gone to the bank and all of that kind of good stuff. I suppose the current environment has just really thrown up the flaw in the scheme, in that you're absolutely right. It is just a fixed output price. It's not a fixed margin. So there's no financial certainty. And that exposure has really come home to roost where, you know, in current times where energy, fertilizer, feed have all increased substantially. So, I mean, I think linking it back to a feed price and to the Chicago and the Matif, there's something in that, in the sense that, you know, they do tend to track energy to some degree as well. But I guess the question is it enough included in the basket to fully reflect what's happening with farm inputs? And I suppose, look, the challenge on farm and the challenge for dairy farmers is, you know, as output price has increased over the past number of years, costs have gone up as well, you know, and guys have pushed output a bit more. So, you know, the variable costs have increased. So there's a piece at farm level now to potentially relook at that and relook at the efficiencies. It's very hard when output prices are high, but the challenge is, I guess, and it's very hard to keep that in your mind, that the swing side will come in the market to some degree. Like high prices won't always stay high, and particularly in the context of you know, overall inflation that we're facing into, it'll challenge it. So I think it's a positive development. I think farmers need to scrutinize it to see, you know, is there enough in it in terms of reflecting the margin pressure that they're experiencing at the moment and that they will continue to experience.
Correct. Yeah, I think we'll chat about that again, I think, in the coming weeks. And so, as you say, farmers need to kind of look at that piece individually for their own set of circumstances. And maybe, you know, a lot of farmers I understand that maybe 10, 15, 20% of the farmers in the Glanbia region were fixed to kind of the tune of 70%, which is, a lot of their milk in a fixed milk price piece. And maybe signing up to this new fixed milk price scheme mightn't be what they want. I think it's 38 cents a litre ex VAT. for 22 and 36 cents a litre ex-VAT for 23 and 24. It's a good price, like call a spade is a good price. But I mean, as you say, Anne, the variable cost and the cost of production at farm level has increased significantly as well in the last couple of years. So it's a piece they need to look at, folks. I think there's lots more on energy. There's lots more on Glanbia. There's lots more on Arrivo in the journal and all the bits and pieces that we've talked about. In the shops, on the shelves this week. Thanks, Anne. Thanks, Phelan. We'll chat again next week.
We hope that you're enjoying this Irish Farmers Journal podcast. Find out more at farmersjournal.ie.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Confidence starts with loving who you are. And when your skin feels nourished and glows on the outside, you naturally radiate confidence from the inside. Give your skin a glow-up with Osea's clinically proven Mega Moisture Duo. This ultra-hydrating body care features two of Osea's best sellers, Undaria Algae Body Oil and Undaria Collagen Body Lotion. These seaweed-powered heroes use skincare-level ingredients normally reserved for your face for results you can see and confidence you can feel. Osea has been making clean, clinically proven seaweed-infused face and body care products for over 28 years. This luxurious skincare is vegan, cruelty-free, and climate-neutral certified, so you never have to choose between your values and your best skin. Glow from the inside out. Get 10% off your first order with code GLOW at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code GLOW.